Welcome to another edition of Words on a Wire. I am Tim Hernandez. Today, we're going to be doing something special. It's actually going to be what I call an extended poetic license, which is something I haven't done in quite some time. I think Daniel has on his shows. This topic that we're going to speak about is one of local and national interest. I find that the people who typically offer the best stories are always the ones who have their feet on the ground and their hands in the earth, which is to say folks who like to walk the talk. And I often share this sentiment as well with, well, I try to remind myself of this often, and I also share this with my writing students here at the UTEP's Creative Writing Program. I feel like as writers, as artists, sometimes it's easy to get, and as people in general, sometimes it's easy to get very cozy behind our comfy desks and tune out the world. And so I try and remind, like I said, myself and them that the stories are out there. And with that said, I've invited today's guest, Joshua Rubin, who has had his feet planted about, 40 miles maybe southeast of our campus here at the Children's Detention Center in Tornillo, Texas. And on this topic, we're going to also hear from the former Texas State Poet Laureate, Lorianne Guerrero, who's also been a guest on our show in the past. Lorianne Guerrero was the former director of the Macondo Writing Program there in San Antonio, in which she worked with youth as well. And back to our special guest today, Joshua Rubin. Let me introduce him just briefly. He's originally from Brooklyn, New York, where he's a software developer, I believe, and where he lives with his wife there and his family. And for the past 6 or so weeks, Joshua's been hunkered down in Tornillo, Texas, bearing witness at the Children's Detention Center there, a very important and critical role, a critical post. With that said, Josh, welcome to Words on a Wire, my friend.
Thank you very much.
Before I begin speaking with you, I'd actually like to read some of the posts because, you know, I realize that as a part of your post out there at Tornillo, bearing witness, you know, it's also to let the world know about what is going on there at that detention center. And you do that through various means. One of the ways is through social media. And it's interesting because as I see your posts and I follow them, they're very brief, sometimes longer, but often very brief sort of updates of what's going on. And as I read them in succession, especially, there is a haunting narrative that is you're writing about that's happening there. And so I want to read just some of the excerpts of your posts, if you don't mind. BCFS van races in to avoid observation, seats full. My guess is new kids arriving at the prison. Come to Tornillo, children's prison. Shut it down. Set Google Maps. Tornillo Guadalupe Toll Plaza. Motels in nearby Fabens and Clint. El Paso isn't far. There are other alternatives, but there is no alternative to shutting down this atrocity. And on November 23rd, you write, more signs of expansion. BCFS brings 16 Sarabia porta potties into Tornillo Children's Prison. Pay attention, El Paso. Thanksgiving Day, bulletin, 2,300 teens in Tornillo Prison. More coming from Florida. BCFS facility overflow. On 11/21, 3 CBP vans roll into Tornillo. Silhouettes of prisoners in caged rear compartments. Let me ask you first, Joshua. Coming all the way from Brooklyn, New York, what compelled you to come out this way, far west, and to bear witness?
I was watching a lot of TV and MSNBC at the point that the family detention crisis happened in early summer. And I came down and protested in McAllen and Brownsville. I came down again later to El Paso for a conference. And I was sitting in a room with a whole bunch of other activists and in a circle, as activists like to sit. And a woman got up and said she was really tired of people coming down and spending a day here and thinking they did something. Mm. So I started trying to think of what I could do for more than one day. And when the New York Times story hit and a couple of months ago, it talked about the ramp up of what was going on at this place, I thought, well, I can go down and sit there, hold up a protest sign, let people know that I'm there, and see what happens. I wanted to see what was going on, and I wanted people to see me see what's going on, to bring people in. And that was my idea, and that's what I've been pursuing.
Now, to do that, you put your life on pause back in Brooklyn. And I feel like it's important to talk a little bit about just you and your life there, because pretty much you can't get it further away from El Paso in this, this country than Brooklyn, New York, you know. And, you know, folks, I think generally across the country see these images on TV about what's going on there, see this, what's happening, and feel like, what can I do? I'm just a software developer in Brooklyn, New York, or I'm just a, you know, a gardener in Tallahassee, or I'm just a teacher in Fresno, California, you know. And you, my friend, are evidence of what one can do. So tell me a little bit about what is it that you had to put on hold back there? You know, what if your life was put on hold so that you could come out here?
Well, my work and my family life, and my life with my friends. I mean, all of those things. I'm missing the holidays. I'm missing my wife. I'm missing my son. And, I want to be there.
Right.
But I felt compelled to do this because, it may be just a lack of imagination. It's all I could think of is to come down and position myself here and see what can come of it. And people ask me all the time now that, I've been promoting this. Well, what can I do?
Right.
And they say, can I send money? And I say, sure, if you want. But what I really want are bodies. I want people to just stand there and join me there, because I believe that enough bodies for enough time will close down this children's prison.
Yeah. Can you tell me a little bit about what it means to bear witness? What does that mean? What is the history of that? What does that mean?
Yeah, I can't actually tell you the history.
Sure.
I know a lot of it comes out of Christian theology, this idea of a sitting at the foot of the cross, both to acknowledge the suffering that you're seeing at the foot of the cross, but also to let people know that it's happening.
Yeah.
The thing about Tornillo is that it's set up to be hidden. It's in a place that's hard to get to.
Right.
It's out in the middle of nowhere, and that's by design. It's no accident that it's there, and it's no accident that other places are cutting back while Tornillo is growing.
Right.
It's a place that's hard to get to, hard to see, hard to penetrate. Well, you've been there, Tim. You look out there, you would never guess what's going on behind those walls.
Right.
Except for the slight glimpse of some kids playing soccer.
Right.
Or the sound of a loudspeaker from time to time. Or if you're there when the workforce goes in, when, over 1,000 strong pour into that place.
You know, on that note, then why don't you give us just a kind of the story of what happens in a day at Tornillo and your observation there. And I think it's important for our listeners to know that when we say that you're out there bearing witness, I mean, you are literally at the gates of this detention center, camped out pretty much there 24/7, right? That's where you're at.
Pretty much.
We also want to acknowledge, too, that, it's taking time away from your post to be here in the studio with us today. But so thank you for that. But can you kind of tell us the story of a day there? What does it look like?
Sure. At 6 in the morning, a Border Patrol wagon comes up to the toll gate where there are about 13 huge charter buses full of employees waiting to be allowed in. That Border Patrol comes up with lights flashing, and they open a gate, and all of those buses pour into the place.
Mm.
So that's the first activity of the day is that. Employees come other ways, too. They're going to a nearby parking lot and being shuttled over there, and that's the action. About 7:20 in the morning, the night shift will come out again, the same buses loaded up, heading back to El Paso to drop people at hotels or at parking lots where they can drive home and catch a few hours of sleep. These employees work for 12 hours a day. They get very little sleep. And, and I think, it's part of the design to keep these people from, having contact with their communities and being in a position to question what's going on there. There's an awful lot about these employees that that you have to think about because they're kind of indoctrinated on the inside. They're read to from the book of Isaiah. They're told that they're doing wonderful work taking care of these children. They're also told.
They are read, too, from the book of Isaiah.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're told never to talk to the children about their ordeal. And the justification for that is somehow they're not qualified to discuss painful things with these children. But I'm not sure that it isn't that they aren't being protected from the narratives that they're involved with.
Right.
These children. And I've spoken to somebody who worked in a place like this who said that he heard their stories a couple of times, and he himself, as an employee, has suffered mentally, had to go into therapy because of what he heard and what he realized he was doing there after all this time. But this sleep deprivation, this crazy thing of having two shifts instead of three shifts, this requirement that the employees, for instance, not tell anybody where they're working, they're not allowed to put it on their resume, they sign non-disclosure agreements, it's to hide what's there. And the idea of witnessing, back to that idea, is to go there and look and be able to provide a narrative that isn't the one that they're promoting.
Right. The singular narrative that has been promoted and perpetuated for quite some time in this country about immigrants in general.
Immigrants in general. Right. And in this specific case, the idea that that these children are particularly vulnerable to something out there that they're protecting them from. They're vulnerable to being misused by their families. And that's what really they're saying. And, what I think of when I think of that is, if I walked into a Walmart and grabbed a kid away from his family and then talked to his parents and said, I want you to prove to me that there's no domestic abuse in your household and that you're not going to use this kid for sex trafficking.
Yeah.
I don't think that would be tolerated. I don't know why it's tolerated here.
Right.
I don't know. But that's what they have to tell themselves. They tell themselves that they're feeding these kids well, that they're protecting them from something on the outside. But I think what they're really doing is protecting us all and themselves from the truth.
And the truth.
And the truth is that these are kids who came across to join members of their family, and they were running away from something desperate to something with hope.
Right. And on that note, on speaking of the truth, you know, another voice for truth in relation to also youth and especially particularly here in the state of Texas, I'd actually like to take a call then from our call-in guests, Lorian Guerrero. She's been the former poet laureate for the state of Texas. She's a professor currently at Texas A&M, writer in residence there. She's an award-winning poet with a couple of books under her belt. And she's joining us on the phone here from San Antonio today. Lorian, welcome to Words on a Wire.
Hi, Tim. Thank you.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are y'all?
Good, good. Thank you. I'm here in the studio with my friend Joshua Rubin, and we've been talking about, you know, he's been there bearing witness at Tornillo at the Children's Detention Center for going a little over 6 weeks now. And so he's here in the studio, and I just wanted to get a sense, you know, what you make of all this. And also I want to ask you, you know, what you think we can do as a mother of children yourself and as educators and as artists.
Well, first, before I start, I want to thank you, Josh, and Tim, for you, for, you know, making us all aware of what's going on there. I've been thinking about this a lot. I think many people have. And I think, you know, as an artist, but also as a mother and an educator, I think it's really important that we, as parents and educators and community members, keep talking about this. I think it's important that we take and create, if we have to, opportunities to help each other really understand the devastating realities and trauma of what's happening here, and how it's not only affecting families now, but will for generations to come. And, you know, I think it feels like so many in our country lack empathy. And I think we as parents and educators are in a unique position to affect change in our young thinkers and counter the rhetoric that they see in the media. It's a hard time, you know, and Tim, right. You and I spent hours thinking and talking about what we can do to help. I mean,
right.
We've for hours about how helpless we feel. And I know so many people feel helpless. But I also know that, you know, I need to do what I can where I am,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
And, you know, I heard Josh say that he needs bodies, and I understand that. And but there's a lot of people who don't have the resources to do that, right? And so mm-hmm. What can we do? How do we help, you know? And I think for me, and maybe for people in positions like me who want to help but can't physically be there, to take these opportunities that we have as parents and educators and members of the community to sort of get people talking. And sometimes that means breaking people open, you know, a little so that they might go vote for the first time or volunteer if they can,
sure.
or, you know, doing, you know, bearing witness in other ways.
Right.
So I think, you know, as we look inward, I think, and create safe spaces for right. ourselves and for others to do the same, then we might just be able to change the narrative and manifest the dream that we have, you know, for our nation.
Right.
I, you know, it's hard, you know, because I'm, you know, I'm teaching here at Texas A&M in San Antonio, and my students, I often talk about what's going on in our country. It's not unusual for it to get pretty heated and, you know,
sure.
we get angry. But,
sure.
You know, I realized something as I was thinking about, you know, what's going on here. And, you know, I teach poetry, you know, mm-hmm. and so you as a poet yourself, you know, we talk about craft and we talk about all of these things. But this semester I'm teaching documentary poetics.
Mm.
And it wasn't until just recently that I realized that I think subconsciously I needed to teach documentary poetics, which has nothing to do with craft or form, but wholly focused on research and content. And I realize now, you know, as I was preparing to talk with you, I realize now that I think I chose to do that because I needed to be reminded why I do the work I do.
Right.
And, you know, Audre Lorde says that the learning process is something that you can incite like a riot. And right now, for me, that's the riot I can incite. And the lesson right now is empathy.
Yes, I agree. And if you listeners are just tuning in right now to Words on a Wire, that was the voice of former poet laureate for the state of Texas, Lorian Guerrero, who's professor now currently at Texas A&M, the writer in residence there. And our special guest here in the studio today is Joshua Rubin, who's been bearing witness at the Tornillo Children's Detention Center for the past 6 weeks. And we're talking about the children that are detained there at Tornillo and what we can do as people, as mothers, fathers, and as artists in the community across this country. Joshua is all the way from Brooklyn, New York. Lorian Guerrero is calling in from San Antonio. And you know, Lorian, I think that's one of the things too, why what really intrigued me about this issue and seeing what Joshua Josh was doing, which you talked about, Audre Lorde's quote there about inciting folks to action. At least that's how I received it. I've always been aware of this since it started, and I began to take trips out there early on. And the first trip, I think, was prior to when Joshua arrived. But, you know, honestly, for me, it really wasn't until learning about, I said, there is a man out there who is bearing witness 24/7 from Brooklyn, New York, and I live 40 miles away from here. You know, why am I not out there every day? Why am I not out there doing what I can as much as possible? And so, you know, just to spread the news, that's what we do as writers, as artists. That's what we do, is we take from the real, from the actual, and we tell that story to the world in our writing, in our books, and in the readings we do across the country. So I felt like it was really appropriate to contact you.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, is there anything else that you'd like to add to this before we move on?
No, I think, again, I just think it's really great what you both are doing. And as long as we need to, I think we'll just keep doing our part.
Right. Well, thank you so much, Lorianne. Appreciate that. And we hope you have a good day out there.
Thank you. You too. Mm-hmm.
So that was Lorianne Guerrero calling us from San Antonio.
It was nice to hear.
Yeah, she's doing great work out there. And you know, Josh, when I went out there the first time when I met you, you were the only person out there. And that was actually the second time I went out to the site there at Tornillo. Are most days solitary, or do you often have at least a few people kind of out there most days? Because I know that the thing is to get more bodies out there.
Right.
Are most days solitary? Are you out
there? There are certainly parts of every day that are solitary.
Right.
So far, I think there have been more people showing up lately.
Yeah.
And I'm very hopeful that a lot of people are going to show up for the Christmas season. Mm-hmm. There seems to be a lot of activity and a lot of interest in showing up there.
Is there an effort, sort of more concentrated effort toward that?
Absolutely. A nationwide effort to bring people there. And especially, we're going to need people from this area, you know, who
from the El Paso region, right.
Exactly. We need it because these are the people that know the area the best. And we also need it because these are the people that are around and are more likely to be able to get there.
Right.
I was struck by what Lorianne said about telling the story. Mm-hmm. And I see it as a couple of stages here. I mean, we have a narrative that's being put out of, you know, by the administration of undeserving children coming here to collect benefits and who have to be held. The narrative switches a little bit here, have to be held to protect them.
Right.
And their families have to be investigated for a really long time, which, by the way, seems to be leading to arrests and detention and deportation by ICE.
Right.
So we have the narrative that they're putting out of themselves as either, you know, the catchers of bad people. Then they turn into good people who have to be protected.
Right.
We have to take control of the narrative. And what Lorianne said is right. We have to tell the truth. We have to tell their stories, tell the stories of suffering that drove them here. We have to tell the stories of how they're being held and damaged for life in a place that's holding them for as long as 6 months, you know, leading to traumas that lead to attachment disorder. And if I can put it simply, the inability to ever love or to feel love.
To feel love or to be deserving of love. Right. Absolutely.
So we have to change that narrative. The other thing that we have to do is we have to become part of the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the bodies come in. That's where we go down there. We stand there in enough numbers with enough outrage to close this place down.
Right.
And I believe it can be done. I don't think, you know, I'm not a wild-eyed radical here. I don't think that I can, by sitting down in front of a prison camp, solve the immigration crisis in this country.
Right.
But I do think that if people respond and we go there, we can close down Tornillo.
Right.
It's vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
It's doing a lot of things that are horrible.
Right.
It's visible. There's going to be more news coming out about it.
Right. Yeah.
And enough bodies there will draw the eyes of the country. It will draw the eyes and we can be the magnifying glass.
Right.
The one that actually shows what's going on there.
And, you know, if you're just tuning in, I'm speaking to our special guest today, Joshua Rubin, who's been posted up there at Tornillo, the Children's Detention Center, for the past 6 weeks. But I want to say that it's important to note for our listeners that, you know, your background is not in, you know, public policy, or it's not in, you're not an immigration attorney.
you know,
you are a software developer, right? And you live back in the East Coast, and you have a family. You're just a regular guy, but, you know, for all intents and purposes, you're a regular guy, you know, who is out here, who's concerned for humanity, who's concerned for human lives, for children in this case specifically, and you're doing what you can to bring attention to this.
Right. My background is being a human being.
Yes.
And
that's what qualifies you.
That's
absolutely
what qualifies me. And being a human being, I have, and all of us have, unless we're psychopaths, we have this reaction when we look at the face of a child, a child in distress, a child who needs help.
Right.
Even more than just looking at adults.
Right.
Children are the window into sympathy and empathy. Children do it for us. And that's why Tornillo doesn't show us those children. They keep us at such a great distance.
Right.
They send for the authorities if we go close to the fence where they're playing.
Right.
They tell the kids, if when we do that, don't talk to them.
Yeah.
Walk away. They turn on their loudspeakers so they won't hear us saying, no están solos.
No están solos. Right. And you know, when you go out there to the site, Tornillo, Texas is about approximately 40 miles, give or take, southeast, I think, of here, of El Paso. When you get out there, it's really kind of a remote. You know, you really have to kind of drive out there the windy road, past some cotton fields, and you get out there and it's very remote and it's very quiet. And it's almost hauntingly so, you know, quiet out there, where those structures were just kind of wiped away for a moment. It would be a very peaceful place, a very sort of relaxing kind of surrounding. And, you know, there are the wetland birds sort of migrating out there and flying around. And, you know, obviously they don't know that there's a borderline there. The birds aren't concerned with that. Neither are the flora and fauna out there, you know, concerned with any of that. It's very peaceful. But now you come back, all the buildings that are there, very ominous kind of a presence out there, you know. And as you say, it does seem designed to be sort of out of the way, you know, off the radar, if you will.
It is exactly that. It's that's the choice of Tornillo.
Right.
Other places that are near population centers will draw protesters, will draw people objecting.
Right.
They're going to go there and they're going to look and they're going to hear stories.
Right.
In Tornillo, nothing gets out unless we go there, unless we force ourselves onto that site.
Right.
Those children will disappear.
Right. And by forcing ourselves on that site, you know, I think it's important to restate, you've had gatherings out there. Sometimes it's just folks sort of randomly coming in and out, but sometimes there's been, you know, concentrated efforts of gatherings. Folks, there was recently rabbis that came from all across the country, where I believe they were from Ann Arbor. Out there and local, I think it was the Loreto Academy, the girls were out there and holding up signs and just kind of bearing witness out there. You know, it's not like you're out there doing any kind of committing any kind of violent act or anything. You're just sitting there bearing witness, just observing everything.
We have an effect by looking. We have an effect by just looking. What they want us to do is to not look, to look away.
Right.
So the radical act that I'm calling for is to go there. Turn your eyes on the place and look and see.
And it's very powerful because, you know, and folks, I mean, across the country who might listen to this interview will say to themselves, you know, what is really the power behind looking? You know what I mean? Come on. You know, we look every day out of our eyes, you know, what effect can that really do? But, you know, I was there when the rabbis were all there also. That was one of the times I went out there. And there is really something performative and yet just riveting about just the simple act of looking. And I recall the moment when the whole crowd was instructed that whenever there were sort of buses coming in and out of Tornillo, we would all stop and just look at it. Let them know that we know. That's really it. And so I remember the one of the big buses came after that instruction was given. One of the big buses filled with children was coming into the gates there. And we all just stopped what we were doing, turned our bodies, stared directly at it. And it was moving because, you know, the children, I remember some of them waved and, you know, they looked right back at us. And the bus drivers and those who are working and going in and out of there, you know, they know. They all know that we are there watching, which is to say that the world is watching. And I think there is something very moving about that that stuck with me. And it's still with me to this day. And so, you know, and I think that a lot of historical atrocities or historical, you know, just injustices have occurred because we weren't looking or enough people weren't looking or because we were looking away or choosing to look away. So I think that it does have an absolute value and is a very powerful tool. And it's very much within our right to stand out there and just stare, you know.
And stare and see.
That's right, stare and see. And now we have a couple minutes left, and I want to give you the closing note. But this reminds me of, you know, I had the opportunity in 2013, a few months before Pete Seeger passed away, to sit down with him. And I say this because, well, we are a literary radio show. We believe in the arts here. But also because I know you're a musician as well, plays the banjo. And when I sat down with him, I said to him one of the things I said, you know, I was hoping to part with something, you know, whenever you get a chance to talk with someone like Pete Seeger, you part with a lot of things. You leave with a lot of information. He said, you know, people say that one or two small acts will never change anything, but indeed it's the only thing that ever has. I thought he just came up with that there for me. And then I later on learned that he's been saying that all around the world for quite some time. But that's absolutely true. You know, folks think, you know, what can one or two small acts do to change anything? And it really is the only thing that has changed anything. I'd like to give you the last word. What do you want people to know about what's going on there? And what can we do?
Well, first, I want to plug my Facebook group page, Witness Tornillo. That's Witness: Tornillo. where I'm reporting several times a day on what I'm seeing there. And so that'll give you a chance to see some of what I'm seeing. I take pictures and I write about it. But I want to echo what Uncle Pete said and say that we begin a movement one by one. And I know that when I stand out there with my sign that says, free them, people pass by and they may say to themselves, there's that one nutty guy standing out there with a sign. When somebody stands next to me, it changes a bit. They look a little harder. And when five people are standing there, they look even harder. And in fact, you know, they start looking from inside too. Security will come around and see what's going on. When we stand there with 100, 200, 300, 400, which is easy to happen, and we do that for a few days in a row, there'll be more than looking. The nation will be looking, and the eyes of the nation can close down this atrocity.
Well, you, my friend, are the keeper of that story, along with the 2,000-something children that are in there right now. And, you know, you're quite a resource, and we thank you for being there with your eyes on what's going on. That said, it's really been a pleasure having you in our show, Joshua. And for you listeners out there, you've been listening to an interview with Joshua Rubin, who is bearing witness at the Tornillo Children's Detention Center in Tornillo, Texas. Josh, thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you, Tim.
It's a pleasure. We'd like to thank our special guest, Joshua Rubin, and our producer, Stefania, back there behind the board. Thank you so much. That wraps it up for this edition of Words on a Wire and our extended poetic license conversation with Joshua. And we look forward to having you again next week, same time, same place, right here on KTEP 88.5 FM, your NPR station for the Southwest.